Nuke 10 Radioactive number 61 for Tuesday, January 29th, 2008. Radioactive returns to its somewhat regular schedule as I talk about family visits, getting more sleep, hacking Moodle, and trying macOS 10 Leopard. In Netheads, I take a look at how to get a sneak peek of D&D 4th edition, discover a secret lair for masterminds to listen to, and experiment with Google Code. Finally, I have a review of the new print gaming magazine, Cobalt Quarterly. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and it's been a pretty busy month since my last podcast. Let's see, the first thing we had was, it was HackDocFest, which was a pretty cool idea. It made the beginning of January an absolute nightmare, but it was just a really great time. So what was HackDocFest? Well, more specifically, it was the Moodle HackDocFest. And with the college where I work, sponsored this, I guess you would call it, it's almost like an unconference kind of thing, where we had a bunch of people from other colleges come here and work on Moodle, which is an open source courseware system. It's basically an alternative to Blackboard, if any of you are familiar with that. It's a way of hosting course materials online, discussion forums, quizzes, that kind of thing. And a lot of schools in our size have adopted Moodle. And that's great because, first of all, it's open source, so you can get into the code and you can make changes when you need to. It's certainly a lot cheaper from strictly a licensing standpoint than Blackboard is. But the downside of that is, you know, there are bugs and you have the opportunity to fix them. And, there isn't necessarily a company there that is going to fix them for you. There is the core Moodle team, which is always working on updating the site. And there are certainly a lot of people out there looking at the code trying to fix things. But that also means that you need to take the initiative and do it yourself. So the idea here was that we get a bunch of people from different institutions together and we work on hacking Moodle, basically fixing some bugs, developing some new functionality, and generally working on kicking the tires and getting things working the way we want them to. And overall, it was pretty good. We had 5 colleges attend, which was pretty cool. And I think we had something like 11 people there, including 4 from the college where I work. So it was nice. It was the first time I've ever gotten together with a bunch of coders and programmers to actually do programming work. You know, I've gone to a bunch of conferences with some of these same folks to talk about Moodle and to talk about how we use it and the kind of things that we're doing. But I really hadn't had an opportunity to sit down and get away and code some stuff. And that was a really nice experience. It was just fun to be able to sit there, talk through a problem, and then actually do something about it. So all in all, very successful. I hope to be having more HackDocFests in the future. There's already planning going on for it. So again, awesome experience. Really, really exhausting. Now, the other thing that was very cool but also somewhat tiring was that my sister came down and visited for a couple of days while her husband destroyed one of the walls of their house and the contractors came and fixed it again. Not something you really want to have 2 young kids around, so she brought her kids with her, who would be the 20-month-old Sydney and the 4-month-old Ben, and it was a heck of a lot of fun. All told, there were 4 kids under the age of 4 in the house, and actually 3 of them would be under the age of 2 years. So it was it was very chaotic, but I think all in all things worked out pretty well. I mean, Chris wasn't getting a lot of sleep because her son Ben, who's like I say 4 months old, is still experimenting with the whole sleep thing and trying to figure out how to sleep for more than 2 hours at a pinch. So Chris was definitely tired. And, you know, having that many kids cooped up in a house for 4 or 5 days can kind of start to wear on everybody's nerves. But overall, I think it went really well. Again, we had a lot of fun, and it was fascinating to see how Luke, my son, who's, 19 months old, and Sid, actually, I guess Sid's older than 20, I guess he's like 22 months old, actually. I'll have to go back and change the show notes. But anyway, it's fun to see how Luke and Sid interact with one another because they are so close in age. You know, Sid's you know, 4 months older than Luke, so there's some things that she's doing that he's not. There's some things that he's doing that she's not. And it's just fun to watch them interact and start to kind of figure out, hey, there's this other kid. How do I play with this other kid? You know, how do I share? You know, which is always a hard thing for toddlers to get a grip on. It was really fun to see how Luke interacted with the baby. He hasn't really seen very little babies in a while. And, you know, of course, the first thing he had to do when he saw Ben was to walk over to him and immediately try and poke the soft spot on his head, right? Because all toddlers must do this. Actually, all kids must do this when they first see a little baby. It's even when the kid has a full head of hair, they seem to unerringly seek out that spot on their head. But all in all, it was fun. I'd like to go and do the same up at Chris's place, maybe over the summer or something. We'll see. It was definitely something I'd like to do more of. So that followed Hack Doc Fest. So that basically meant that the first 2 weeks of January were just absolutely consumed by either work or family. And then to follow all that up, we had the disease, the plague, whatever you want to call it. I guess it was technically just a stomach bug, but man, it has been sweeping through the Lehigh Valley. It actually closed a part of the Lehigh Valley Hospital because so many people were getting sick with this bug, and it spread to my family as well. So we spent the weekend with Sue and Luke both dealing with the consequences of a stomach bug, feeling absolutely miserable. And, you know, if you've ever, I'm sure that those of you with families or those of you who pick yourself sick yourself, you know, it just drains all the energy out of you. Even if you're not sick, you know, taking care of the folks who are and trying to manage the one kid who wasn't sick and the kid who was, well, even more exhaustion, right? So that actually brings me to a post I have up on Nuketown right now called Operation Z's, which is my attempt to try and sleep more. I know it's sad, right, to actually have to make a concerted effort to sleep more, but, you know, when you've got two young kids, it's what you got to do. You have to make a project out of it. So what I'm doing right now is just trying to get to bed earlier, trying to get 8 hours of sleep a night, trying to get rid of these huge raccoon eyes that I've got going on right now, which I looked at myself in the mirror the other day and I didn't really recognize myself because I'm just so zombie-like. So Operation Z is my attempt to get more sleep, and it's been working. Last night was the first night of Operation Z's, and I got 10 hours worth of sleep, which was very refreshing. I did not get any work done yesterday that I wanted to get done, at least at home, but I did get a lot of sleep. So I'm hoping to repeat this throughout the week. It's going to be tough because I have to come in early on Wednesday to work to do some system upgrades, but I'm hoping to get to bed at like 9 or 10 o'clock tonight and then get up at 4. And at the very least, I'm hoping to get a good 7 hours worth of sleep, but we'll see how that works out. Now, my other project during the, I guess I started this project back in late December, was to install Leopard on my MacBook Pro, and it's going pretty well. I think overall it's a worthwhile upgrade. I have run into some problems, but first the good stuff. I'm loving Spaces. Spaces is what allows you to have multiple virtual desktops, basically. Well, multiple virtual windows. So you can quickly switch between applications. By way of example, I presently have like one window set up for my web browsers and Twitter, another window set up for word processing, Notepad, that kind of thing, and another window set up for Terminal. So when I'm doing, say, web development, I can quickly switch between the window I'm coding in to the window I'm messing around on the server in to the window that I've got the web browsers open in, instead of having to have all this stuff stacked upon, stacked pile upon pile on in one virtual desktop, I can just spread it out to the different windows. Now, this is nothing new for Linux. This has certainly been happening for quite a while over there, but it is new for the Mac, and I like how it was implemented. It's been very helpful, and it's gotten to the point now where when I get to work and I'm on my Mac at work, I'm really missing it and thinking, ah, damn, I really wish I could put all these chat windows off into a space and not have to deal with them right now. Or just, you know, not have them cluttering up my work spot. And This is with, I have like a 23-inch monitor at work, and I still feel like I'm cluttered. So I'm looking forward to upgrading to Leopard at work as well. Now, on the downside, stacks don't display as lists. Now, stacks are this basically, how do they explain this? You have a folder on your dock, which would be the application launcher within OS X. And if you mouse over this folder, it will display this fan of all the stuff that's presently inside that folder. If you have too many things in that folder, it gives you this huge pop-up window with a whole bunch of different applications in it, which isn't very manageable. That's not what I want. What I want is to be able to right-click on that folder and see a list of the applications that are in that folder. Because one of the things that I've been doing for a long time since I actually went to the Mac store and saw that there was, if you right click on the applications folder, so if you put your applications folder on the dock and then you right click on it, it'll give you a list of everything in there, and it gives you quick access to almost all your programs. Unfortunately, it's just a little bit clunky in Leopard, but good news is they're going to be fixing that in 10.5.2. The other thing that I'm really having a problem with, and the thing that's bothering me the most, is my Mac going to sleep. For whatever reason, half the time when I close the clamshell and then try to open it again, it does not just instantly spring back to life. It seems to go into deep hibernation mode. And to be honest, I haven't quite figured out how to get it out of hibernation mode reliably. I don't want it to go into hibernation mode. I want it to work the way it's always worked, which is I close it, it goes to sleep, I open it again, and it opens. I don't think that's too much to ask for. I haven't really done a lot of research on it yet to see what might be happening. I think that perhaps a clean install of Leopard is in my future. I'm wondering if that might deal with this particular problem. But so far, that's my only complaint. It's a fairly major complaint because it's a pain in the ass to have to shut down your computer just to reboot it every time you want to open it. But overall, Leopard's been working pretty well. Now, I did want to mention that I've got a couple of new posts up on Nuketown and over at sci-fi.com. First off, I've got a review of Savage Worlds Explorers Edition, which is a nice lightweight role-playing game, and that's up on Nuketown. I also have a new off-the-shelf column, which talks about basically what books I'm reading right now, including Hyperion, The Fall of Hyperion, The Golden Compass, and American Gods. I have a new Game Day column in which I talk about the Book of Almost Everything, which is a DM's kind of reference guide that I have with a whole bunch of articles about random item creation or random NPCs or basically just a bunch of columns that I took from Dungeon Magazine and Dragon Magazine and the Dungeon Master's Guide and put them into one book so I can use them during the game and I don't have to go hunting through magazines for this stuff. So that's what that Game Day column was about. And then the last thing is I have a review of Dragonlance Chronicles, which is an animated film based on the, well, I guess you could say classic books by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. It wasn't really a great movie, but I didn't absolutely hate it. I think I gave it a C- rating. Links to all this stuff will be up on the show notes.
Hi-ho, it's your favorite amphibious reporter with a helpful internet tip. Listening to the Geek Acres podcast can make you a well-rounded, hip, and fascinating individual. Go now to geekacres.libsyn.com. That's geekacres.libsyn.com. Your friends will be green with envy.
So one of the things that has been consuming my gaming group for the last couple of months has been discussion of 4th edition of Dungeons & Dragons, which should be coming out in June of 2008. But anyway, we've been looking at the articles as they come out on Wizards.com, kind of dissecting them, talking about what we like, what we don't like. And admittedly, there's a lot more stuff that we don't like than there is stuff that we do like. But, you know, we're all in our 30s now. We're somewhat curmudgeon-y, so you might want to take our complaints with a grain of salt. But anyway, over on Wizards.com, they had a recent D&D podcast, which was entitled You May Already Be Playing 4th Edition. And I thought it was pretty cool because it talks about the 4E-like aspects of Star Wars Saga Edition, the Book of Nine Swords, and the Complete Mage. So from Star Wars Edition, we have the new quasi-armor clash slash saving throws known as defenses. So instead of having a will save or a reflex save, you'll have a will defense or a reflex defense in addition to your normal armor class, which is how you defend yourself against physical blows. So the idea is that instead of having a totally separate mechanic for touch attacks, where you say, okay, well, what's my armor class? Okay, I have to subtract out my armor, but then I use my magic bonuses, blah, blah, blah. You'll just use your reflex save, which is a simple number, which I like. It does streamline things, and we definitely like the way that played out in Star Wars. Now, for the Book of Nine Swords, they're doing things like basically powers that you'll be able to use every turn and, well, every combat, I should say. So you'll have certain special abilities that you'll have for the length of that combat. You can use them in that combat, for example. Well, we'll get into that in a second. And let's see. The last thing would be from the Complete Mage, where they had feats, which were called reserve feats, which if you're a mage, if you haven't casted your fireballs for the day or some specific spell for the day, then you gain the ability to use a fire spell at will. I think it was like a fire bolt that would do 2d6 points of damage a turn. So this is some of this stuff. I think it's all interesting because I'm really interested in trying out new game rules. My problem with it in 3rd edition has been that they haven't really developed these new powers and baseline them against the core rules. They've basically given rise to a 3.75 version of D&D, where you've got kind of like all of these really cool abilities, but they don't really stand well against the core classes as were defined in the player's handbook. So that's been a little bit problematic in our game. But I did want to talk about one of the things that I am doing in my game, which is I am playing a sword sage from the Book of Nine Swords in our Dark City D&D 3.5 game. And it's interesting. I'm going to have a full review of that book in an upcoming podcast, probably the next podcast, actually. But it's interesting to see how some of these powers will work out in 4E. For example, my sword sage has the ability once per turn, or rather, once per combat, he can pull off this maneuver that, if he's successful, will cause an extra d6 of fire damage. He has another ability that if he rolls 2d20, if the lower 20-sider, so he rolls 2d20 to attack, just like you normally would, and if his lower of those two attacks hits, he does an extra d6 of cold damage. He has special stances that allow him to get an armor class bonus during the combat, and the basic idea behind this is that he's kind of has these arcane-like abilities, and he can use them, one of each of them, during the combat, and then at the end of the combat, he can get them back if he just spends like 5 minutes focusing. Now, again, related to, say, the core 3.5 rules, he's a little bit broken. But if you look at how this might be used in 4E, and the idea that your character is always going to be able to do something, and that what is really important about an encounter is, or what is really important about the way that the game plays, is that you have your abilities when you need them for a combat, and then after the combat, you're basically able to get those abilities back, and that the story isn't necessarily being driven by game mechanics as it is where the logical breaks in the story should be. So instead of having the party go out and adventure and then they have to stop because a wizard's out of spells, which you almost never see in fantasy fiction, you'll be able to go out and you'll be able to keep adventuring until it makes sense to stop. Either there's a natural break in the story or you want to stop for the night or whatever. And, you know, in relation to 3.5, some of this stuff doesn't really work. And I don't know that it works for my core world of Greyhawk. But in terms of a game mechanic, well, I'm interested. So as part of Hack Docfest, one of the cool things I got to try out was Google Code, which, as the name might imply, is a useful tool for collaborating on coding projects. It includes a wiki, downloads, subversion server, and 100 meg of space for your project. You can learn more about it by going to code.google.com. You can learn how to create a project of your own by going to code.google.com/hosting. This was really cool for us to be able to work on Moodle because we were able to create our patches, check them into Subversion, upload them to the server, and then other people could download those patches and apply them to their code projects. So very cool. If you're doing anything where you're working with other people who are doing open source projects, I think, or any coding project really, I think it's worth checking out. Now, I don't know exactly how the privacy thing works. I have to go back in. I think I may need to set up one of my own for Nuketown just to play with. I'm not sure if you can set things to be totally private or if it is the nature of Google Code to be open, but either way, it is a very good project, a very good tool, and I would recommend checking it out if you're going to be doing any development especially any diverse development where you've got people kind of scattered around the country and you need to pull all those people together to work on a project. The last thing it has is a rudimentary bug tracker. So very cool stuff. Definitely check it out. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is the Secret Lair podcast, which, I'll just pull the description right from their website. The Secret Lair is a podcast and blog which follows the real-life adventures of Chris Johnson and Chris Miller. From the safety of the lair, they planned grand travels, trick unsuspecting victims into recorded interviews, plot the downfall of David Moore Project, manage their goal of tri-county domination, and frankly talk about whatever catches their attention. Now, you may have heard of Chris and Chris from the Harping Monkey podcast, and it is, you know, if you like the Harping Monkey podcast and you liked that style of conversation, then I think you're going to enjoy this. Now, I should warn you, it is not a gaming podcast, although gaming may come up occasionally. It's really much more of a kind of slice of life. This is what we're dealing with now. This is the kind of things that we're interested in, that sort of podcast. So I think it should provide a nice complement to the Evil Genius Chronicles, which is another nice geek mastermind podcast that I'm way too far behind. Some of the stuff that they've recently talked about is their month-long info detox project, where they gave up Twitter, email, that sort of thing for a month. I don't know that they actually gave up email for a month, but they did try to get away from blogging on RSS and all of that for a full month. They talked about what movies they've been watching, what books they've been reading, and the horrors of living with the family plague, which was obviously something that I could easily relate to. You can learn more about the podcast by going to www.thesecretlair.com. You can also check out their Ning community at thesecretlair.ning.com. And of course, links to both of those will be in the show notes.
SFFaudio.com. The sound of tomorrow. Explore the limitless worlds of the imagination with SFFaudio.com. Reviews and features, audiobooks, online audio, full cast audio drama and radio theater. The ultimate source for news from the world of science fiction and fantasy audio, brought to you by the most trusted team in the business. SFFaudio.com. The future never sounded so good.
Dragon Magazine is dead. Now, Wizards of the Coast might not like you to think that Dragon Magazine is dead, because after all, they still have something called Dragon Magazine being published as part of D&D Insider on the official Wizards of the Coast website, but in reality, it's dead. The print publication went away after Wizards decided that they didn't want to publish it anymore, and as a result, the only thing you'll only be able to get going forward is PDFs. And to get that, you'll need to subscribe to D&D Insider, which is their fee-based service for the new edition of D&D. I'm bummed about this, because I really looked forward to getting Dragon Magazine each month. I also subscribed to Dungeon Magazine, which was its Game Master-focused supplemental magazine. Dragon was more about D&D in general and had articles about the different systems and optional rules, and it was kind of crunchy, kind of organized more for players. Dungeon Magazine was all about adventures and advice columns for Dungeon Masters. Both of these have been a part of my gaming life for the last 7 to 8 years. I had a couple issues before 3rd edition came out, but once the 3rd edition of D&D came out, I was a diehard subscriber to both magazines. And now they're gone. This has left a void in my mailbox where these magazines used to be, and I've been looking for something to fill it. And fortunately, Kobold Quarterly is stepping into that void. This is a pro magazine published by Wolfgang Bauer, who is a longtime contributor to Dungeons & Dragons. He originally worked for Wizards of the Coast, or for TSR, then he worked for Wizards of the Coast for a short period of time, and then left the company to do his own freelance gigs. With Kobold Quarterly, he is trying to fill the niche that has been left by Dragon Magazine, and he's doing a good job of it.
He has a number of established writers contributing to the magazine, including Keith Baker of Eberron fame and the sage himself, Skip Williams, who has been writing the advice column in Dragon magazine since it seems like the dawn of time. It's got a very kind of old school Dragon magazine feel to it. Think maybe probably issues 50 to 150, something like that. It's got lots of small press ads. The paper, it's made out of a good sturdy paper, but you know, the feel of it and the layout of it definitely evokes the older pre-Paizo publishing days rather than the newer stuff, which was very slick, very good looking, but definitely kind of kicked it up a notch. This is not to slam Kobold. I really like the kind of older school feel to it, and I think it really complements exactly what Wolfgang's going for here, because this is something for the fans, in large part by the fans, and I think it's everything that Dragon magazine, at least in its PDF incarnation, is not. It's focused on fantasy D20 content, which mostly translates into Dungeons and Dragons in its current 3.5 incarnation. I don't know what he's planning on doing with 4th edition. I haven't seen any 1st or 2nd edition stuff show up in there, and to be honest, given the licensing issues surrounding those, I don't know that we ever will. But some of the articles that they've had are, well, they should be familiar to fans of Dragon magazine, including let's see, biographies on Princes in Hell, An Ecology of the Lich, and of course, Sage Advice, only now it's called Ask the Kobold. It includes interviews. Number 3 had Ed Greenwood, and features such as How to Run a Noir Game by Keith Baker, and Star and Shadow Magic by Wolfgang himself. These were really good reads, and I particularly liked The Ecology of the Lich and The Princes in Hell, which, you know, these are the kind of fluffy but still having a little bit of crunch articles that I liked from Dragon magazine. I liked anything that kind of fleshed out the game system and gave you a little bit more that you could, you know, sink your teeth into when you were planning on running some sort of planar adventure, or if you were going to be dealing with a particular monster. I'd like to see more of the Dungeon magazine content folded in, specifically the campaign workshop articles and the 100 Things features. They're certainly getting there. In issue number 3, they had a Dangerous Doors article, which is exactly the sort of thing I used to get Dungeon for. But, you know, I'd like to just have a little bit more of the DM side of things. The magazine is available in print and PDF formats, and actually I got one of the joint subscriptions, which gives me a print version of the magazine as well as the PDF. In practice, the PDF usually ends up arriving first, since, of course, there's no postage involved. The print copy was simply bound with heavy grade paper and 2 staples. Unfortunately, this gave rise to the center page of the magazine coming out as the staples gave way slightly, but a little bit of surgery fixed that. Frankly, I'm just happy to have something to be able to put on my shelf. The PDF looks really good, and I really like the ads. To be truthful, I think that's one of the things that I miss most about Dragon magazine, in addition to having the actual print version. If you go and you download the sample PDF from Wizards of the Coast website, there's no ads. And that's just, you know, it's part of the gaming community that I like to read about. I can't tell you the number of times I found out about a business or a product or something like that through Dragon magazine, and it's great to be able to have this outlet. If you'd like to learn more about Kobold Quarterly, there's 2 things you could do. You could go to www.koboldquarterly.com. You could also go and listen to Wolfgang be interviewed about Kobold Quarterly and his other projects at the Canon Puncture podcast in show number 28. And yes, there will be a link to that in the show notes.
Hi, this is George Takei. I love listening to the Geek Label podcast, and you will too. I'm getting paid for this, right? Run, run, run! Well.
That'll do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. Yes, I managed to get in under the wire and get 2 episodes up in January, which was ultimately my goal. I'm always looking for feedback. You can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com.